Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Well, hello and welcome to episode 20 of the Create More podcast from me, Ben Stewart. 20 episodes, eh? Who'd have thunk it? Well, for our 20th anniversary, I've got a special two-parter for you. It's with a director called Will Nash, who is also now a full-blown friend. And we actually got to know him. He's just done another short film, which he funded on Indiegogo. And I got to know him because one of my friends, Mr. Christopher Hartle, he's an architecture friend. And at Make, we have laser cutters. So for the intro or the credit sequence at the beginning of the Will Nash's somatic film, they came to Make and they did the laser cutting and they kind of built it all there. And if any of you have laser cut before, you'll know that it is a slow process. So while Chris massively underestimated how long it would take to laser cut some stuff, me and Will Nash got to talking, and I've made no secret of the fact that one of my dreams would be to movie director. So part of this podcast and the Create More sequence is finding out that these jobs are way more complicated than I thought they'd be. So Will was the perfect person to interview. So he's same age as me. He's done quite a few short films, actually. You should check him out on Twitter at Will Nash. And you should also check out his film, which is Somatic, which the trailer's just come out for. So it's at Somatic Film, so Somatic Film. And sorry, his Twitter is at Willy Nash. So you should go and check it out because it's brilliant. And I started watching it and got really inspired. I was like, oh, this is amazing. Like, Will's just the same age as me. He's doing short films. Well, I've always dreamed of doing a music video. I should do a music video. How hard can it be? Well, you'll find out in this podcast that a little more complicated than it looks. I guess what I fell for, and what is a massive compliment to Will, is that it looks so good. It's essentially seamless, and I don't notice all the things that go on behind the scenes, of which there are tons. So I massive love films, and we have a full-on geek out in part one just about what films you like, about how Will got into films, his whole kind of, I guess, progression to go in there. I mean, a big question for me is always, I always imagine if you're an 18-year-old, you just come out of secondary school or A-levels, you don't know what the hell you want to do with your life, you should definitely listen to this podcast, and in doing so, be inspired to go and do other things, and like movie directors, computer game designers, architects, you know, these are all things that are really cool to get into. So we talk all about how he got there. So he's worked on loads and loads of films, like really cool films, as like he started at the bottom rung and just kind of worked his way up. He's been in the sound department, assistant director, second unit director, electrical departments, made the tea, sure. But it's given him such an amazing kind of background of how to do this. So he's now on full-blown films. And man, he talks about using a camera, a video camera worth £100,000. Didn't even know one that expensive existed. So it shows you how little I know about the film industry. So part one is all about how Will started. And then part two, the beginning of part two is literally just about what everyone does on a film set, which genuinely had no idea how little I knew about this. So I was, as I said, massive film nerd. One of the whole basis for this podcast is all background, you know, behind the scenes, making ofs. And I still didn't actually know what a director of photography does, a cinematographer does. I didn't know what a gaffer does. I felt a bit stupid. So you should definitely listen to this podcast and then subscribe. That would be really helpful, either on Acast or SoundCloud or iTunes. Subscribing really helps, and leave a review if you enjoyed it. And then I'm going to release, this is episode 20, part one, which will go out tonight at midnight. And then the next episode, I think I'm just going to release tomorrow before lunch. I said in the podcast to do it on Friday, but I have them back to back. So you can go to work with a podcast and then come home with another podcast. But it's wicked, and I really, really hope you enjoy it. Bye-bye.
I've never heard my voice back in my ears like this.
Well, this is why. Okay, so the reason I bought this was because it gives you real-time headphone feedback. And as I said in the making of, when you hear your own voice, you do kind of zone out a little bit.
Yeah. I'm going to read the phone book to myself now.
I know, it sounds so bassy. So the closer it is, the more dong-like it is towards you.
Yeah.
There you go. So right,
nice,
that's good.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm just gonna go straight into it. So I'm joined here with Will Nash, and I think I've got a feeling that this podcast is gonna waver and ask you random questions. So why don't, to retain some sort of narrative?
Yes.
This will be from you starting, leaving secondary school to where you are now, and we will meander through there. Because okay. I did one with my, creative designer from a computer games company, and we did the same thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And loads of people really liked it.
That was really cool. I got to the end of that podcast.
Yes.
And hashtagged it.
Yeah. My friend was like, you have to stop saying people will listen to the end. You don't need to keep saying listen to the end. I'm like, well, I don't know.
It was good though, because like it was kind of like a weekly episode or something from one single podcast.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was binge listening.
Yeah, yeah.
One podcast. So first of all, I want to ask you, you were on a podcast last week. Or a week before, 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago.
It must have been 3 weeks, because I've been Dons La Castablanca, which is a mix of French and Spanish for you there.
Okay.
Yeah, I was there for a week, so it was a week before that.
So you met the cool dude from Predator. Did you meet him or talk to him?
I got to say hi to Bill Duke from Predator.
Nice.
That was it. Because he was on the first section of that podcast. He's doing a new film about some boxers, and they're all really excited about it. And I don't know much about boxing. Like, I know when everyone goes, oh, the fight's on, and everyone's going to stay up till 4 a.m. to watch it. I'm like, that's cool. Like,
yay.
Rocky.
So but where was it recorded then?
So that was recorded in Canada. And then I was live linked up through Skype.
You were doing a Skype podcast, right? So you didn't meet him face to face.
No.
You did get to talk to him though.
But it would have been cool if like it was a video Skype as well. I did kind of went, hi, Bill. And he was like, oh, hi, yeah. And that was it. Because then the presenter was then, I think, probably worried that I might geek out. And was like, right, we're going to play a song now. Yeah. And then
you're
we'll
like,
get
do the thing from Predators, do the quote thing.
Yeah, do it, man. And why are you shaving the whole time? Yeah. Like, answer it.
It's a great piece of suspense making, though, when it breaks.
Yeah.
I think I was watching, because Predators has just come on Netflix. And I was watching it thinking, it's kind of got, if you had to build suspense without actually showing anything, They've kind of, that and Jaws have kind of, they've mastered every single non-visible suspense thing.
Yeah. He's there, but you don't see him.
Yeah, exactly.
The whole movie.
Especially Predator, which is amazing. Yeah. It's just over there.
Yeah, just keep looking over.
Just looking into trees.
Yeah.
Oh. So what were you doing on that podcast then?
Were
you promoting?
I was, kind of a bit shameless promoting.
That's
again.
That's what it's all
nice.
About, right?
Yeah. I'd been on it before Christmas with my first short film that I did. I had a chat with them about that, and they quite liked it. And then I thought, well, I've been...
Which film's this?
This was for Ice Cream.
Okay, yeah.
Which was only 2 minutes-ish. And then after we finished the new one, Somatic, I just got in touch with Casey again and said, hey, you want to shamelessly promote me again? But also, like, let me be on another podcast.
How does... Just jumping straight into it.
Yeah.
So with the Ice Cream film, that's... Is that like your first proper your own film, basically? So you've done a few. But I was looking at a Vimeo thing today, and obviously last week when we were watching. But this was was that the first one that you wrote and directed yourself?
So that was it was a joint venture with an old friend of mine, Rhiannon Edwards, so we met at the Telegraph newspaper when I was working with them making video content. So if there was ever a big editorial piece, they'd want some videos, we'd go make it. She was a journalist at the Telegraph, and would then constantly get brought on to come and produce some of their videos. And in some cases, when they weren't getting run so well, because they got a bit of a reputation for it, which is all fine now. Like, I think they've had a big turnaround and fixed it all up. But so she'd get brought on and basically fix the shoots a lot of the time as well. And we used to sit there and kind of moan at our lunch breaks of like, we should be making our stuff or like our own stuff. And like, come on,
we
like,
can do this.
Yeah. Like we're making a video about like farming carrots and stuff. Like we can make something more interesting. Than that.
I think it's like, to me, that's the perfect test bed to learn stuff though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like to be in an environment where you think you can do better than the person that's above you. That's like the best, that's the best type of training, isn't it? You're like, I can do this.
I can do this. Come Let's on. Get on with it.
Sod the carrots.
Yeah, exactly. So we, so yeah, then we met up a few times outside of work to kind of discuss different ideas. So we both came along with our own ideas. My idea was what is now Somatic, but I wanted to do it in like a 2-minute short burst. Virgin Media used to do the short films competition, which was it had to be 2 minutes long, finish on the 2-minute mark. If it's a second over or under, you get kicked out, sort of thing. And I thought, wouldn't it be great to do this story of you know what I did? And she had a great story as well. And then instead of us picking a story, we thought, let's start from scratch, because both of our stories had like a nostalgic feel to them. So we then came around the idea of the ice cream man and what it'd be like when in the 90s when the ice cream man would come along, and you know, sometimes your dad would tell you if the song's playing, he's out of ice creams.
As a kid, you've never run so hard than when for the ice cream man.
Exactly. Trying to like rummage through that drawer in the kitchen to find change.
Yeah, dad.
Or like or your mum's purse quickly and just run out and get ice creams. And so we kind of came together with all these ideas, and then Rihanna wrote the actual script. And then we just got a team of people together that we knew from work as well. We kind of didn't want to go down the route of, like, in the nicest way, not use friends who are interested in making films, but because we work in the industry, let's actually use people that we are friendly with.
Well, I think that's because I did the first podcast of this series with Wooden Overcoats, and they did like a, it's like a radio comedy show, but on podcasts, but they did it exactly the same way. They knew lots of people. They worked at the BBC and stuff, and they were like, well, why don't we just for free get 3 days of people's time?
Yeah.
And then is that how kind
of, similar thing. I just thought, let's just get people in that we know. We got the camera equipment that we used was from a company, 24/7, that I've known for years since I was a camera trainee. And they just said, look, if you need camera equipment, just buy the insurance and we'll give you the kit for free and you can go off and we'll give you loads of stuff and you can make some stuff with it.
How much is the insurance alone for like a 3 minute? How long was the shoot? That was
2 days. Yeah, so that was over a weekend. So that was actually longer to shoot than Somatic. Somatic's 9 minutes and this was 2 minutes, but it's bonkers how I still can't get my head around that. But
well, I guess as your confidence grows, the kind of takes there's less chopping around. You're more confident in the takes and you set stuff up.
But yeah, I think in the definitely with the recent one, mainly because we had 8 hours in the location we were in, and it was like £100 an hour while we were there. And it was like, we kind of need to get on and do this.
Yeah.
So it was kind of forced into that. Whereas, with ice cream, it was just a 2-day shoot. And they gave us cinematic cameras that we used. So we were using the Alexa. No, we were using the Arri Amira, which is like this documentary cinema camera that people have started using, and it's fantastic. But it's sort of the cameras that I would use on a shoot when I'm working as a camera assistant anyway. So
are mega cameras, right?
These are like...
I don't want to sound too naive here, but like we did some marketing promotional footage, right?
Yeah.
For one of our buildings, and we got these guys, they had your drones and everything, but the actual camera they were using was like a Sony handheld camera. And were saying, actually, the 4K footage out of it is so good.
Yeah. Oh, like probably the Sony A7 or something.
Yeah. And it was tiny, but it's a stills camera, but they were using it to film. And they were like, well, so, and that's an expensive camera, but it's not super expensive.
Yeah.
Like, it's something that I would go, oh, do you know, maybe if I got a bonus, maybe I'd treat
myself.
These ones you're talking about are mega expensive.
Yeah. Right? I mean,
car expensive?
Like
shitty Ford Focus.
So the one of the main digital big cameras at the moment, so there's a company called Red and there's a company called Arri do lights and cameras and lots of various other beautiful things. Their main big digital camera range is the Alexa, and I think the body of that is probably about $80,000.
$80,000?
Yeah.
Just for the body?
For the body, yeah. And then lenses starting at $10,000 each. for like a fixed focal length lens.
Jesus,
depending on what you're
Christ.
Doing. So it's kind of
wow. And do you, I mean, are they're required for what you're doing. You couldn't like color grade the crap out of some like four like basic 4K stuff. Really, or does it? You can tell that someone's done it cheaply.
Well,
like
I mean, with the when the Alexa first came out, it couldn't shoot 4K. Anyway, but the dynamic range that was on that camera I think it's got like 13 levels of dynamic range compared to other cameras. Some cameras say that they've got the same.
Yeah. All like the only thing you're gonna, I'm gonna ask you to explain all the lingo. So, because I know dynamic range is for a cheap photograph is where you like overlay low, medium, and high exposure, and then you get these kind of really cool, hyper unrealistic.
So that function that you get is pretty much like
is that like shooting camera raw? So like
so you get like a raw flat image when you come out of it, and then later on you would then go into the color grade and pull out all your colors and make it look even more beautiful. One of the things that I remember when I first used the Alexa as an assistant on a shoot was just the image as a raw image looks beautiful, and I was like, why are we gonna grade this looks amazing, but obviously you kind of have to because it's so flat. It just, you know, if you watched a whole film like that, you probably would lose interest quite
quickly. I remember you texting me going, oh, I've not finished the film yet, we're going to color grading or whatever, and I was like, come on.
Yeah.
I've done a few 3-minute videos on Premiere Pro. Can't take that long. Yeah. But I guess it's because you're trying to match the lighting. You know, the sun's different at different times and stuff.
So like with the start of Somatic, the opening shot is a Jeep driving down a driveway. Mm. And then the next shot is the big wide shot of the house. There's like an hour between that happening. And at that time in the morning, an hour is a huge amount of difference in the sun moving and also moving location. So, that was when the color grade particularly came in, because in film wise with the timing of it, that moment's literally a few seconds after it. Whereas it in real life, it was like an hour and a half difference. And so you've then got to try and match it all up. And
also if you're trying to catch the perfect light, it's sunny, everyone outside, go film this.
Yeah,
it's not, you're like flat later.
It's
like,
kind of, that's a constant battle, I think, with filming is, excuse me, it's all that tea.
Because I think one of the fun things about doing the podcast is there's loads of jobs that I wish I could do and want to do.
Yeah.
And then I see the product that people produce and I'm like, that looks manageable.
Yeah.
And then I do the podcast and I'm like, it's really hard.
Yeah.
Like it was like with Scooby's Pit with his podcast, I was like, I can do a podcast. And then found out he did a radio show.
Yeah.
And then I listened to the Wooden Overcoats podcast and I was like, That sounds just like what we're doing right now.
Yeah.
It can't be that hard. And you see they've got like a recording studio room, they've got mixers, and then you understand.
Like the next level of,
And then I was expecting you to go, the camera's a couple of grand, and you're like, it's £100,000 with the camera equipment. I'm like,
just, you know, just in the pocket.
Because I saw your Somatic, right?
Yeah.
And I saw that, and it looks so nice.
Yeah.
But not knowing what you did to do that, I was like, and it's only 3 minutes or eight. How long is it again?
Including the really nice credit section at the end. It's 9 minutes.
Nine minutes.
Title sequence as well.
And I was like, I could do a film.
Mm.
Come on.
Yeah.
I'll do a 3-minute film.
Yeah.
And then suddenly hearing you talk, I'm like, the logistics.
It's kind of, I mean, I've always, when I was younger, I was just watching films and thinking, how hard can it be? And I think even one of the first things I tried to shoot when I was at college was with Chris, and it was just there was a song about a fish. I can't remember what it was on. It was like some old hip hop album, and he just repeats the word fish over and over again. So I just like started filming loads of fish, and there's an old man who talks halfway through the song. So I dressed my younger brother up as an old man and got him to try and lip sync stuff, and that was really hard to do because he was like 11 at the time and wasn't interested, was more interested in strutting around the room dressed as an old man. And I was like, no, you've got to do these pieces to cameras. And after making that, I was like, it's actually really hard to make stuff. Like,
really hard.
And then I started editing it. And I was like, this looks awful, because we'd used like a camera from college. And I was like, why doesn't this look like, you know, Ridley Scott's Gladiator that I saw last week? Why is this so hard?
So what I will talk more about it later and remind me if I don't remember it, but it's cinematography is a part of it I don't understand at all. But it's funny what you just said, because I did some terrible films in uni. Like, they were awful. I think we did a music video called Wiggers with Attitude to Dead Prez. And it's so bad.
Yeah.
But it really kind of highlighted just how hard it was.
Yeah.
Just trying to get like that. And just the idea of editing was like, oh, geez, it takes ages.
Yeah.
I just lost interest so quickly. It's
like, I'm slowly getting to love editing more and more. And you probably end up spending, depending on what the project is, but you probably spend the majority of the time on pre-production and then post-production for the edit. The shoot itself was only like a day with an extra evening that we did. But yeah, and I initially when I first, I remember going to like the first edits for Ice Cream, I was like, oh, this will be done really quickly.
Yeah.
And it wasn't. And I was like, why is this taking so long? It's like two minutes. And it was bonkers. It was a lot quicker with Somatic. Using the same editor again, my friend Nick, and we just kind of try to do as many evenings together as possible. But because he's, you know, he's working full time, I'm working.
Yeah.
It's trying to, the biggest struggle is finding people's time to kind of piece it all together.
Yeah.
But I kind of, I mean, there were times where I was just like, oh, I wish this was done now. But then I go back in the next evening and start editing like another shot from a different scene.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, actually, this bit's cool now.
Yeah.
Let's concentrate on that. I mean, I can't watch it anymore now because I've been watching it for 4 months.
Yeah.
So I need a break. But
that's another thing. I'm going to talk about that in a bit because I'm just literally wildly going through all the things I want to talk about. But one of the things, for example, with this podcast and with Somatic, it's got to a point now where people aren't looking at it as, oh, it's my mate Will, he's made a film.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, you've made a film.
Yeah,
it's so good. It's got to the level now where you're part of the main playing field now, aren't you? So suddenly,
I hope.
Yeah. Well, it's because like someone at work was like, "Yeah, I've stopped listening to your podcast, but you should take that as a compliment."
Okay.
I was like, he's like, "Well, I only listen to 5 podcasts, and sometimes I listen to yours. It would have just become it was good enough. It just didn't make. Why would I listen to you interviewing someone I don't know when there's a podcast with Brad Pitt on or something.
Oh, I see.
I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
And then suddenly the quality that you had to achieve is so much higher.
Yeah. You've got to then start raising the bar and everything.
It's
and
a proper podcast now.
Yeah.
And it's a proper film
exactly.
now.
You're like, oh. Yeah. Mm. And that was one of the things, especially with Ice Cream and then with this one as well, was, you know, working in film and TV and commercials, I was like, there's no point me making a short film if I'm going to shoot it on a 5D and I'm going to have friends as actors and we're going to have it in like a really shitty location and no one really cares. And we've got a script that, you know, like my 16-year-old nephew's come and written the script and we're going to make it. It was really cool. I was like, that's all the things that when I first started out as a runner, I ended up working on shoots like that. And I'd just be there going, wow, this industry is rubbish. Why am I here? Like,
this is the least inspiring industry.
Yeah. And they'd all be there going, oh, it's going to go to festivals and it's going to do so well and all this. And you're there going, what? No. And then I kind of started leaving short films behind me. And then, you know, fortunately getting into the proper stuff. But, and then when I started making short films, I was like, I've become that guy.
Yeah.
But I don't want to come at it at that angle to everyone. I'd be phoning up my friends going, I'm doing a short film. And they'd be like, ah.
Here we go.
And I'd be like, but it's me. And they're like, oh, okay, cool. That's fine. And I'm not going to, you know, hopefully it will do fairly well in festivals and stuff, but I'm making films because I want to make films.
Mm.
I'm not making them because we're going to send it to a festival. It's going to do really well.
Yeah.
We've got like Dave from around the corner. He's been acting at Amdram Society for 12 years and he's really good.
Yeah.
You know, none of that stuff. I was just like, look, we've got everyone together from work and I've got actor friends. Let's bring them on. And let's just make something and let's just kind of raise the bar. And this is the direction I want to go to. And I think they all get on board knowing that this is pretty much selfishly all for my benefit that I want to get into directing. So I need a back catalogue of work. So they're all being nice and supportive with it all. And especially when we finished the last one, Somatic, you know, I had a lot of them saying, when are we going to make another one? And I was like, oh, that's quite cool to hear.
Yeah.
Like, I hope you're not just saying that. Yeah. And then I never hear from you again. Especially DOP Tom is just so eager. In fact, he texted me today. He's just come back from a trip around Scotland and Ireland. And he was like, can we just go there and go and film some stuff? Like, can you find a film where we have to go and do that? And I was like, yeah, okay, that'd be cool. Like, we'll find something.
Just as like a random, just as something that always amuses me is when you come up with a storyline or a script or whatever, and you're thinking about what you want to film. I was interviewing this guy called Kibwe Tavares.
Yes,
And he was talking about doing a music video with Katy Perry.
Yeah.
And I just, I, as from a, like the seedy males, right? Who must be in the film industry. Yeah. You'll imagine if you're like, right, so what do I want to do for the next film? It's a beach film. And then you've got like a hot friend, and I think you should be in it. What? Yeah, no. Go with me on this.
Yeah.
Here's the script. I'm naked in the entire time. I know it's
artistic.
It's integral to the story.
Yeah.
But what was I watching? It was something with Megan Fox in, and the only reason she's in there is to be super, super hot.
Transformers or
no? It was like something to do with being turning 40. Anyway, the only reason she was in there...
She is, isn't she?
Yeah.
Because...
is to be like a
real... No, I remember seeing that. And
not that I'm against that.
No.
Cool with it.
But it was such a... such... Like, just a curveball on that storyline.
Yeah.
Like, she's the woman who's 40 and Paul Rudd's in it, isn't he?
Yeah.
Who is hilarious. Yeah, and then the woman's working in the shop and there's a shop assistant and she's just like... And the other shop assistant's like, I think Megan Fox is stealing clothes. I'm like, why is Megan Fox in this film? That doesn't make sense. And then she goes over and she goes, you've got fantastic boobs. Do you mind if I film? Megan Fox is like, yeah, sure.
And they're like, hang, hang.
And there's probably thousands of men everywhere watching it going, right, yeah, nice. And, you know.
I mean, I get why she's in there.
Yeah.
Because you and watch a trailer like, and you're like, well, I want to see more of that.
People in the studio are probably like, high five. Yeah, we made loads of dudes tune into this film. This is really cool. But I was just like, what? How is that helping the film?
But
like,
if you're an actor and you've been there, you know, Megan Fox, what do they want me in the film for?
Yeah.
It's really good exposure. No, what am I doing?
Yeah.
They're just going to fill your boobs.
Yeah. But like,
can we go again? Cut.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Just one more time. Just squeeze it a bit harder.
Dorit totally comes over. So if you could just do them like this. And be like, yeah. Like, hold on. Come here. I'll give you an example. You know.
It just must be like, that's just, that was just, it amused
there
me,
is,
the idea.
There is massively that side of it. Like, and I kind of feel like nowadays, I'm hoping that we're kind of, as an industry, growing out of all of that.
Yeah.
I know there's like the huge race issue at the moment as well, that people aren't being cast properly and you know, not enough female directors going on as well. And I just thought, right, like, we shouldn't really have these issues. Like, they should have been resolved by now and we should just be carrying on as normal.
I know.
And it's kind of shocking that all this stuff still goes on. You're like, why?
That's why I thought, like, Star Wars, incredible for casting John Boyega.
Yeah.
As, like,
yeah,
just... from what, East London or somewhere? Yeah. It was like to have him like heading up a Star Wars franchise. You're like,
it's brilliant. Yeah. He was good in that, actually. Yeah. Daisy Ridley was a bit.
I actually really liked her. Yeah.
But she's very posh English.
Yeah. In interviews, I was like, oh.
Yeah. I know. Yeah.
But awesome.
Yeah.
Anyway, right.
Sorry,
so yeah. I'm now going to put some sort of narrative in.
Yeah,
so
sorry.
What I want to ask you, so I think about this a lot. So just from my own personal thing,
yeah.
When I watched your short film, I was like, I want to be a director.
Nice.
I can't, obviously. But
no, that's cool,
I also,
though,
for my 30th, wanted to be a DJ. So
yeah.
I hired a venue and we have a 30th night DJ for the evening. I was terrible and I forgot to press play a few times and everyone booed me. But it was my birthday, I didn't want.
Yeah.
So the same thing, I said to Beck, I think I can do a short film.
Well, yeah.
Come on. Will's done it.
And then
the more I watched yours and I started looking at all the cuts and stuff, I was like, it's actually quite complicated. But what point did you know or think you want to be a director? Because, you know, when you're first starting, you're like, I want to be a football player, I want to be a director, I want to be like 9 million different things.
I think when I was 16, I wanted to work in film and I thought I wanted to be a director. And I wasn't kind of 100% sure. And then as I was growing up, I went to an all boys Catholic school, which was lovely. And then we went to college.
Yeah,
there were girls.
A levels
just went out the window. I didn't pay attention to a thing. Apart from, I realised that art was quite easy to kind of pass.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of conceptual art. You just say stuff and they give you an A. And I was like, oh, cool, I'll be a conceptual artist. This is cool. And then I went off to do my foundation art design course. And
You did art and design?
Yeah.
Okay, I see.
Down in
James,
lovely Fareham near Southampton, which was all my friends were at Southampton and I couldn't get in because I applied like, I didn't realise that you could do this course. And then my mates were like, we're going to do a foundation course instead of bumming around for a gap year. And I was like, whoa, what's this foundation thing? So I applied and I was like, damn, it's too late. And then Fareham College was around the corner and they were like, yeah, just please come. We need students. I was like, cool, okay. So I kind of went there, didn't know anyone. So kind of just, you know, moped around a lot. And then before making my choices for university, like literally, I think like a week before, I discovered their media department upstairs. And I was like, oh, this is where like you can just run out a camera and make stuff.
Yeah.
And I think I'd already I'd made my list of universities I was going to do art at. and then quickly.
So you're
going
to do art at university?
I just thought, carry
on. Can you do film studies at university? Like, as in, direct? I want to be a director.
Well,
I want to do university.
It depends
course.
On the. Yeah, I've got. I've got a big bit of beef with film studies at university because depending on what it actually is, the one I did, I think should be shut down.
Wow, glowing review from you.
Yeah,
then.
I mean, yeah, it was. Anyway, I'll come back to that.
But I have a very similar feeling about it as well. But so you can come.
So then, and then I was like, oh, I can study film and like video production and stuff. So then I started applying off to universities and colleges that would do that at a degree level. Went to Maidstone for 2 months to do video production. The locals weren't nice on the students, so I kind of left. a few scrapes and stuff, and I was like, this is really nice. So I came back. So I was at college in Winchester, and I then looked at the university there, and there was a film course. You had to pick a side subject with it, so I picked psychology because I thought, oh, that seems interesting. You learn about why, you know, people are thinking stuff.
That must actually be quite interesting.
That was more interesting than film studies, I thought.
What is film studies? What do you do on film studies?
The film study course that I did was pretty much watching films and critiquing them and finding out why directors 100 years ago would do something. And then, like, so as a basic history package and everything, I think that's good. And it's kind of essential to getting into all this. You need to know, like any industry, it's good to know how it all started. But for 3 years, it was just like, oh, come on. And then towards the end of, so the last year, then the practical stuff started happening, but it was a really basic, like, edit suite that they had and really pants cameras.
Yeah.
I then since found out that universities like Bournemouth and Farnham do fantastic courses where you get to shoot on Super 16 and like real film stock. And I was like, why didn't we have that at Winchester? And they had like industry professionals going to those universities and doing chats with them and trying to get them onto short films with them or on projects. I was like, why are we just like watching films the whole time? So from that side of it, I did think it was a bit useless because then when I started working as a runner, you know, you go on the shoot and they'd like, you know, they ask you how you are and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And what do you do? And what have you done? And I'm like, oh, I'm Will and I've got a film studies degree. And they're like, that's great. So I'm going to have tea with milk and one sugar. Yeah. This is Jeff. He wants a black coffee. If you go and make that with your film degree. And
you're like, it's not really what I wanted.
What a waste of, And also it was just like being a runner, you've got to do it for like, people do it for quite a long time. I only did it for 2 years, but I know people who've done it for a lot longer whilst trying to find out what direction they want to go in and also trying to build up your career from that point. So I did think that it would have been better if I just left uni and just gone off and done it straight away.
Thank you. I know. I mean, I don't think I... The thing is, you now have the confidence and hindsight to look back and go, God,
Captain,
I wish
hindsight.
I'd left.
Yeah.
So that's cute.
You shouldn't have done your film degree.
So I did, because I was about to say, learning about what a film director did 100 years ago, is, if you just change the word film and put architecture in, that's exactly the same as a learning process.
Yeah.
But like, I didn't give a crap about what an architect did 100 years. I just want to design right now.
Yeah.
And I feel without, so if you filmed something and then they were like, do you know there's a French director 100 years ago who did what you're talking about? And you'd be like, oh, well, I'll go back and review it. Now I've got some context, something to like fill my head in.
No, exactly.
Whereas when you go back, you're like, I guess. Oh, he's done the clever. Yeah. Okay.
We had one lecturer that's really annoying. He's a Welsh fella. Anyone who's listening who went to my university, I think he's still teaching there. He used to wear a white shirt, short sleeve shirt. I won't give his name away. Bright blue trousers, really thin, tall, skinny fella. Just would give a printout of quotes and where these quotes are from and then just like talk at you for 2 hours and then get in a mood at you that you wouldn't hand in this glowing like written paper afterwards because you were probably there with matchsticks on your eyelids trying to go, oh my God, I'm going to pass out in front of him. It was so dull, some of those lectures.
Yeah.
And it really was killing some of the passion of, you know, filmmaking. But yeah, I should have just cracked on with it. And I mean, it's all hindsight. And I mean, that was part of also as well with the new short film of, you know, I've always thought about these things. If I'd go back and do things again, what would I do differently? And that would be one thing. If I could go back and just be like, hey, Will, it's Will. So you're at the end of the second year of uni and I think you should just call it a day now.
Yeah.
You've met all your friends that you're now friends with. You don't make any new ones in the third year. Don't worry. Yeah. They all leave you. And
because I think, you know what you're saying? You're saying there's two alternative film courses that have cool lectures that come in and they explain stuff, right? So again, I feel that's one of the massive benefits, especially being in London,
yeah,
is that you're constantly around people who are better or vastly better yeah. than you. So you can kind of see a trail of progression.
Yeah.
Whereas back in the Midlands,
yeah.
you know, you've got someone who comes in who explains about an industry.
Yeah.
They're not from the industry
yeah, yeah.
or they're very
or they wrote a book
bored.
About it.
Yeah.
Or...
And they're totally like,
yeah.
it sounds terrible. They're just totally uncool.
Yeah.
And you're like, I don't want to be like that guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Therefore, that industry's dead to me.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it is.
yeah.
And it kills the joy of it. It was,
yeah.
I recently been thinking, I wish I'd studied more of history when I was growing up. But my history teacher at secondary school was so boring.
Yeah.
You know, and just had no enthusiasm. Well, I mean, he had enthusiasm for the subject, but like he just never brought that over to us.
Yeah.
And now as I'm getting older, I'm just like, you know, if I go traveling to a new country or something, I want to know the history of what's
yeah.
going on. And
yeah.
I want to know, you know, the food and all this malarkey. I'm just like, damn, I wish I'd like, if I had like a history degree behind me or something.
Yeah.
Maybe I'd be better at this.
But what I like is that it's like, I think there's still so much time to explore and do stuff. It's
yeah.
like, but the nice thing is, the thing I get so scared of is you plateau or you hit a dead end.
Yeah.
You can't progress any further
yeah,
than
yeah.
that. That's what I hate the idea of thinking.
I think a lot of people get stuck on that, don't they?
Yeah.
Like, there's a fantastic commercial at the moment with Idris Elba who goes around to different people and says, what do you want to do when you grow up? And there's some people sort of in the early 30s who just go, oh, I don't know, like maybe I still want to be... like a fireman or something.
Yeah.
And he's like, okay, well, you're in your 30s, like you can still do it. And then he talks to a lady and a man in their like 60s and was like, what do you want to be when you grow up? And they're like, well, I am growing up. And they're like, well, you're growing all the time.
Yeah.
So, you know, in 10 years, you're going to be older and grown up more than you are now. So what do you want to be when you're growing up? And this woman's like, oh, I want to play a guitar or something. And he's like, okay, cool. Let's sort it out for you. She's like, oh, wow, cool. And they, you know, and it got me thinking of like, yeah, actually, like,
yeah.
you know, 32 next week. But still can like go in a different direction if I
know.
And
I constantly want to like. I love that Steve Jobs like stay stupid, stay hungry or something.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
That, like quote. I love that idea
yeah.
because I think you know. I said I did that night. I DJ'd. I mean,
yeah.
I was terrible. But
yeah.
the cool thing is, it gave me such a massive, bigger respect.
Yeah.
For anyone making music or DJing.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was able to enjoy music way more when
yeah.
I'm like, oh, it's so much harder than you think.
No,
it
definitely.
Is.
Yeah, yeah. I think when you start understanding processes of how these things happen.
Mm.
You get more out of it because you probably like, yeah, like with the music thing, you're probably thinking when someone's making music or you listen to music, you're probably thinking, how did that
yeah.
happen?
And you know, I also feel like I'm quite on Spotify is a perfect example.
Yeah.
And I don't like the song Skip, don't like the song Skip. Don't
yeah.
like, so someone's put their heart and soul into that
yeah.
song and don't like it.
Yeah.
You've given it no time.
Yeah, yeah.
And I feel as well the benefits of Vimeo and these things are amazing.
Yeah.
But like, you know, you're watching yours and there's like five videos on the side and then
yeah.
you just fly through them.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're like, people have tried really hard.
Yeah. It's a shame, but it's kind of, I think then that's also a skill in itself is that you've got, what is it? There was some stupid car commercial the other day that was like, people make a decision within 6-7 seconds
yeah.
of seeing something, whether they want it or not. But I mean, that's a real thing.
Yeah,
they
yeah,
just
yeah.
put it in the stupid car commercial,
yeah.
and it's like, And I was watching. I think it was Skoda or something. It was like, well, I don't want that Skoda.
Yeah.
But thanks for advertising
yeah,
it to
there.
Me. Yeah. Thanks, guys.
You don't even get my 7 seconds.
But thanks for that little. I mean, I can't even remember what the car commercial is, but I remember that one bit. I mean, that's how successful that campaign was. But
damn them.
Yeah. But I think there's that thing with music and films is that you've got a real, especially nowadays. You know, you've almost got like goldfish memory time to
yeah, yeah.
get people's attention. And in that time, they've got to go, wow, fuck, that's really good.
Yeah.
I want to see more, yeah. I want to listen to more.
Well, because like with yours, I was like, you're like, right, here's the link, go and watch it.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm going to watch this in a dark room
yeah.
with the headphones as close to my, like, well, my surface of like a 4K screen.
Yeah,
on.
Yeah.
Just because.
Virtual reality headset, just walking around the room.
Yeah. Just bumping into stuff mindlessly. But I was like, I want to watch it properly.
Yeah.
Like when I know there's a really good film on,
yeah.
I hate watching it without headphones on because you're like,
yeah.
oh, you're missing kind of half the scale of
yeah,
it,
yeah.
this noise.
I love going to the, if I know a film has been, for example, filmed in IMAX,
oh, yeah.
like the Everest one that was out.
That was so good.
Yeah, I went to, so Greenwich has got an IMAX screen, so it's kind of LIMAX.
Yeah.
But so I went to that and I made a point of going to that screening
yeah.
for it. I didn't watch it in 3D because I didn't want to have a headache. But like, yeah, I made a point and it was just amazing. The landscapes on that
yeah.
were brilliant. And I just thought it's probably been so much better that I've watched it in
yeah.
the format that they've shot it in.
Totally agree. Because Enfield's got an IMAX.
Yeah.
It's not tiny. It's pretty,
yeah.
it's massive actually.
I think it's the same ratio. I just don't think it's
yeah.
the same size as.
But I like won't watch a film. Such a snob. I won't watch a film unless it's IMAX. But I don't because Enfield. I don't think anyone knows about it.
Yeah,
it's a shithole up there.
Yeah.
So you, like, I watched Mad Max in there 2 weeks after it came out, and I was like one of 12 people in the cinema. Yeah, yeah. I was in the middle of the middle.
Yeah.
It was one of the best film experiences I had because one, I didn't know what was going to happen.
Yeah.
I didn't have any concept of what was going to happen. Yeah. I'd only watched one trailer.
Yeah,
I just
got
told everyone was like,
"Class of the trailers, did it?
You have to watch this film.
Yeah,
it's incredible.
Yeah,
and people were banging on about it so much. I was like, all right,
it was
that element of surprise.
I watched it on the Sunday of my stag do with Chris. So we'd been drinking for maybe 3 days, I think, at this point.
Lads.
I was blush, and I didn't. You know, when you just like you've got the blues so badly from drinking.
Yeah.
Right, so after 3 days of drinking, the blues are really bad, and like I don't want to do anything. Like I just want to be in a nice environment and cuddled up with like cotton and stuff. And Chris was like, we should go and watch the film, and I was like, yeah, let's go and watch the film. So we picked Mad Max. I don't know why we picked Mad Max. I kind of need to go back and watch it sober.
Yeah,
because the images I've got in my head are terrifying.
Yeah,
like the main dude with the mask.
Yeah,
I was sat in the middle of the cinema. Chris on my right, and I was just turning to him going, I want to go home.
Yeah, he's making me feel ill.
Yeah,
you know his pussy boils and everything.
Oh god, yeah.
I think there was so much about that film where they're like milking these fat women for milk, and you're like, it's so just slightly off center. You're like, that's rank.
It's weird. And also because of still having like blurry vision and not really knowing where I was, I did feel like the edge of the frame, like I was in the film at certain times.
That's perfect.
Yeah. But it's such a terrifying film to be in.
Yeah.
When you're that hungover.
It's also relentlessly overwhelming, that film. Everything, it plays around with speed and time, and like things are flying at you.
It's
and they, like
absolutely bonkers. One of the things I read about the film was that they basically tried to get every piece of action in the center of the frame the whole time because of the amount of quick edits that were going on. Instead of your eyes looking around the frame to find the next interesting thing on the pitch in the picture, everything is in the center of frame, so you are literally just getting hammered for like 2 hours.
Yeah,
it is just images, and you're just like, this is fucked up.
One of my friends, who will remain nameless so people don't hate him, was I didn't get it. I didn't care about anyone. I didn't like it. And I was like, you mother,
do you not talk to him anymore?
Begrudgingly. We don't talk about this. It's a topic we don't discuss because we agree to disagree. Yeah. But I had to stay at his house while our house was being done up, and he's got iTunes with everything on.
Yeah.
And it's got all the makings of it.
Oh, okay.
So for a week I was there for a week. Yeah. I didn't watch any telly. I just watched makings of.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is why I wanted to talk to you.
Yeah.
Is because I find the making of stuff almost more interesting than the actual film. Because I guess part of me wants to know that it was really fucking hard to do it. Like, it makes it so much more interesting because you're like, how do they do it? Like, I actually don't understand how they do it.
When Lord of the Rings came out, I mean, you could buy a box set of the making of on its own.
I did, it's
stupid.
3 hours. Like, it's so good.
And I would sit there and watch it. And my mum would come in and just be like, you're still watching that DVD? I'm like, yeah, it's really good. And she was like, oh, Coronation Street's on, I'm on it. And I'd be like, well, there's a TV in the back room. Go and watch it there.
Mum, they made an orc. Sodger Coronation 10, Street.
10,000 of them.
Yeah.
And like, you know, they'll come over and take over Manchester if you're not careful.
And the thing I love about that is like, that would be amazing. Just hacking their way through Coronation Street. Because I actually watched Lord of the Rings again last night. Because you know when me and my wife were like, what film should we watch?
Yeah.
I'm going to go and change baby's nappy. You choose a film. And 20 minutes later, I'm still choosing a film.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, she won't want to watch that. She won't definitely want to watch that.
Yeah.
Oh, God. So we ended up on Lord of the Rings. It's like, it was almost like a veto, but neither of us could disagree with his choice. It's so good.
Yeah.
But I think like a rags to riches story because of Peter Jackson building up basically Weta Digital, the sound, the special effects, this whole movie industry.
Yeah, yeah.
He kind of owns most of it. It's amazing.
Well, I know when they were making The Hobbit, so instead of, because it was all in 3D, so with a 3D camera rig, you've got two cameras built in, and instead of going over and changing the lenses on each camera rig, so you'd have like two lenses, say it's like a, I don't know, 50 millimeter focal length, instead of going over and changing those lenses for a tighter shot or a wider shot, he just made rigs where every rig is a set lens. So he had like 20 camera rigs or something, which is like 40 cameras or something crazy. But he just bought them outright and was like, oh, I'm going to make you loads of money and make, you know, loads of films out of this. And he hires them all out all the whole time. And it's just like, so instead of having that faff, you just, I mean, it's a faff to change the camera. But it's probably worse actually. But he just brought in a new camera. Like, you know, oh, here's the 50mm camera, here's the 24mm camera, and you're just like, wow.
Switch around. I can't remember which film it was, maybe Lord of the Rings or maybe King Kong. He was using virtual environments.
Yeah.
And he was they would film the action and he would like just move a camera around.
Yeah.
And it would in the TV screens, he would be able to see
yeah.
just this live set. And it was like photorealistic. And I was like, man, technology's got so good.
Yeah, that was the whole Avatar thing as well. James Cameron, he would just be walking around with like this screen and he'd get the actors to go off.
But hasn't he just kind of developed these cameras himself as well? Doesn't he like own a patent for the cameras?
Yeah.
And he's just like, I mean, isn't he going to do four now?
Oh, God, I don't know why.
Just do one more.
Yeah. Like, it's Pocahontas in space. We know the story.
Yeah.
All went horribly wrong. Everyone died. Everyone's happy at the end. And, you know.
Wow me with stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But do you watch the makings of now and you think, Jesus, mine was challenging. How the hell did they do that?
Yeah.
Like, mind-blowing.
Like, sometimes, I mean, I guess from, like, working in the industry anyway, like, I've seen firsthand a lot of how we do things.
Mm.
And anything that I kind of haven't done, but I kind of know how it's done anyway now by watching stuff. I mean, it will probably go ahead of what I know anyway soon. But, so sitting there and just watching stuff, I used to try and really try and sit and work it all out because I was so keen and eager the whole time. And now I kind of, if I'm not enjoying a film, I'll just sit there and be like, that guy's eyes are out of focus. It's really bad. In fact, I watched a music video last week and this guy's just singing along and all of a sudden, like, he's just completely out of focus and there's no reason for it at all. And I was like, that's just really bad. Come on. Like, you've got one job. Just do it. Just do your job.
Do you feel it ruins as many films now as like the ones that are bad are unwatchable because you know exactly what's going wrong, and the good ones are almost poetically amazing?
Yeah,
you're like,
I think
someone's done it properly.
Yeah, I think a good film story's got to be distracting enough from the technical aspect for me. Like, one thing I'm quite keen to keep trying to do is, you know, you can do something technically amazing, but your story ultimately has to be very good. I kind of think, you know, it could be shot really badly, but if the story's good, you can watch it. And I've seen stuff where it's been shot badly and then the sequel comes out and they've got loads of money and they shoot it amazingly and you think, well, you've actually now lost that touch that you had.
Yeah.
But the stories are good. And I think with that, then that will distract me from any technical stuff that's going wrong. But yeah, the moment I'm watching something and I'm just like, man, you can see he was in a studio being CGI'd into that explosion outside that building. Outside.
Yeah.
Like, it's just bad. Like,
I have like a total hatred of special effects where the camera does a move that it would be impossible, unless it's a flying one, like a Lord of the Rings swoopy one. But I just find it just takes you away from the action completely. So if you think of like your Mad Maxes, your Matrix, all the kind of classic ones, which were hardwired camera moves made amazing with special effects. That's incredible because almost like when things fly out of frame and aren't quite centered properly, that makes it seem so much more real than it being like perfectly.
Yeah, I quite enjoy it when, you know, someone gets out of the water and it splashes and there's a bit of splash on the lens.
Yeah.
And they haven't removed it or they haven't done the shot again because there's splash on the lens.
Basically thinking of The Revenant when you say that.
Yeah, kind of.
Did you watch that?
Yeah. I thought it was really good. I did have to pop out and get a drink halfway through and then came back in. And the same scene that I'd left on was still carrying on.
Yeah, probably the same shot as well.
I think it may have been. I didn't think I missed anything.
Yeah.
But, no, I thought, I mean, like, technically, I thought it was amazing.
Yeah.
I didn't think the story was bad. I thought it was an all right story. I quite liked the way how when some of the Native Americans were speaking, their voices were out of sync because there was a kind of ethereal, like, almost like angelic thing to them. If you see it again, like when he's chatting to some of them.
I don't think I could sit through it again. It wasn't even that, it was just like, did you watch Gravity? The same thing, just everything goes wrong over and over again. Just when you think it can't get any worse, he falls off a cliff and has to wedge himself in the
Gravity. someone has said to me at Gravity that, like, oh my God, wait till you see the end, I can't believe it. And like, for anyone who hasn't seen the end of it, I'm going to ruin it for you now. I won't.
Do it.
But
do it, it's my podcast.
Okay.
Ruin it.
So,
go and watch it. Pause it and go watch Gravity.
So everyone was saying to me, like, oh my God, I can't believe at the end of Gravity that amazing thing happened, or that spectacular thing happened. And it got to the end of Gravity, and so she lands back on Earth.
Yeah.
And then gets out of a lake that she's landed in and walks off.
But almost drowned. That was it.
But I was thinking from what people were saying to me, that, I don't know, they've been attacked by aliens, or that, like, her country's just disappeared because of explosions, or George Clooney's there with an espresso going, hey man, like, you took ages. Like,
so you're sat in the cinema after the credits have rolled going, no, I'm waiting for the awesome thing to happen.
Is it going
to
happen at the end of the credits?
Waiting.
Like, what's going on? I just, like, it was, technically it was really good and stuff, but just when, that's the thing I hate as well, when people tell you things about films before you go in and watch them.
Yeah.
Like, some films I don't care, like, and some TV shows, I'm literally like, I don't care, but recently just finished House of Cards, and if anyone had told me a snippet of what happened, I blasted it from Friday to Monday when it came out, and I worked on the Saturday and Sunday. I don't know how I fitted in 13 hours of like TV watching.
Nice.
But if anyone had said the single thing, I think it would have just lashed out and killed them. Like,
The only thing I don't like about Game of Thrones, I just find it, it's probably quite realistic, and I find it relentlessly depressing.
You know,
just everyone's total bastards. Just total bastards.
Yes.
Like, but like, that is that posh person facade where it's like, how passively aggressively menacing can you be? Just a look, you're like, oh. So anyway, we'll stop geeking out about films and go back. So I want to know, just from my own point of view, again, more about you, is that...
I'm so you want Taurus.
Yeah. 7.5 at all. But like, how do you... So you want to be a director?
Yes.
Your parents like, but have a backup just in case you can't be a director.
Oh, my mum massively.
Yeah, like become an electrician or plumber or something.
She was always like, oh, she's better now than she used to be.
Yeah. Now you've produced work.
But she's still kind of, it's just my mum's way. She kind of always like, oh, have you got, you know, because I'm like being a freelance, you sometimes don't know what you're doing the next week or not.
Yeah.
And like, which is fine after like 10 years. I'm fine with it. Like, I know I'll be able to get some work and it's all cool. And my mum will call up the weekend. She's like, so have you got any work tomorrow? And I'll be like, no, day off on Monday. Okay. And what about the rest of the week? Something coming in? No idea. Oh, right. And you can see that disappointment. Yeah. It's like, no, mum, I'll get a call tomorrow. It'll be fine. Or like, I'll get something for the end of the week. I'll be fine. Don't worry. But even when I started out, I think it was my mum. It was either my mum or one of my aunties said to me, why don't you go to Pinewood and ask them if they've got a job they can give you? And I was like, what? Like in security or like manning the gate?
Yeah.
Like, I can't just turn up at Pinewood Studios and be like, can I just have a camera job, please? And they'll be like, no, you have to kind of go and work with the crews. And
you're like, oh.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yes, okay, I'm being director then.
Yeah, my mum said I could come around.
My mum said ring you.
Yeah.
But do you know what I mean? Like, because I remember someone said, they were talking about Andy Murray and they were like, like when he was 8, he just said, I'm going to be the best tennis player in the world.
Yeah.
And that's the difference between you and him is that he believes he's the
His
best.
His mum was a tennis coach, wasn't she?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's kind of...
So that helps. Yeah. But it was just that... but the idea
like
of...
Daniel Radcliffe and his mum. Like, that's how he got that job.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there was a little bit of...
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
She must be going, right?
Probably just
you
like,
owe me.
I want to be an actor. And she's like, you will be the best actor in the world.
You owe me big.
He's
like a bajillionaire now, isn't he?
Yeah. And a lovely guy. As well, from all accounts, but which is probably more annoying.
I don't want to like him in films. I don't know why.
Yeah.
And then I watch Horns and I was like, he's actually really good in that.
He's good. I've not seen that.
Yeah.
Because
he's got an amazing American accent, which is like one of my real hatreds is when you watch bad American accents.
Yeah.
Like I can't watch House because Hugh Laurie doing an American accent.
Yeah.
Did
you watch Night Manager?
I keep being told it's amazing.
It was really, really good. But
by my mum. I know.
Yeah.
I recommend stuff to my mum.
My mum keeps telling me to watch the old House of Cards. Oh, I was around when I was younger. You should go watch it. I mean, she's only in her 50s, not her 80s. But
In 4.3 and in black and white.
Yeah. With Hugh Laurie and that, he was just always borderline, seemed like there was an American twang to his accent. I wasn't quite sure where he was from. And I thought, you can't let go of House. Like, just be Hugh Laurie. Shut up and get on with it.
I did actually hear a podcast with Gary Oldman, and that's the first time I ever heard his actual voice before.
Wow.
Like, he's just like a Cockney.
Yeah.
Or sounds like David Bowie. He sounds exactly like David.
Or Christian Bale.
Yeah.
Like, instead of him doing this all the time, he's like, you're right, mate, how's it going? Christian Bale. And you're just like, right.
But I've actually heard him in interviews talking random accents as well. He's like, well, whichever film I'm on, I'm like, do you even know who you are?
Yeah.
So anyway, we're going back. So, so you just... What were you doing on the side of directing? So obviously you decide you want to be director, but you're like, shit, I need to fill my day with something.
So, I've been working as a camera assistant for a good couple of years now. I started off as a runner, then...
Was that your first job then out of uni?
What did I do? Well, I did a bit of... I came and worked for like some catering company in London because...
As in film catering?
No.
Just literally straight up
film catering would be even worse, I think.
Yeah.
Because you're stuck in like this little trailer thing, just dishing out food to everyone going... Fish and Chip Friday, there you go. And, Yeah, I worked for some swanky catering company when I first came up to London, like going to swanky do's with swanky people. I hated it. It was just lots of swanky people.
Did you talk to people going, I'm actually going to be a film director. This is just a stopgap. And they were it's interesting. I'm going to be an actor. And you're like, oh, fuck.
There were quite a lot of, you find that there's a lot of people who are starting off in the industry as well. There were a lot of actors and other runners and producers or, air quotation marks. But I did that for a bit and then I really hated it. And I was like, I just got to get going with like working in film and TV. I just want to do it. Then landed at work in commercials for, I think, like 2.5 years doing that, which was really dull as a runner.
As a runner again, wow, ignore that noise. That's not in the podcast. That's just my email thing going on. So you just literally, I want to work at, imagine you're an 18-year-old listening to this podcast. How did you get
How did I do it? Basically, I just went and said hi to someone. They gave me a job. No. So there's loads and loads of production companies around the country. There's probably too many. There's, you got all your high-end ones that make you big films and your TV stuff. Then you got your corporate ones.
Which was that like, did you go, I want to work at Universal? I don't know, whatever the London version
sort of
Universal
is. I basically just, I got a list of all the production companies and I just went door knocking with the CV and just went and gave out loads of CVs. And then I might get a job off the back of that. And then after that, you update your CV and you go and do it again.
What did you write on as the job you wanted? Do you like director and nothing else? Anything?
The next Spielberg, please. No, I just put
a 10 million budget movie just as a first off, nothing less. Okay.
Yeah, it'll be fine. I can handle the stress and pressure of that and turn it around and triple it. I just put runner on that and then just started going on shoots, making teas and coffees for people, doing all the menial work, which, I mean, it's tough being a runner. And I've always had a lot of respect for people who do want to be runners first and not try and come at a different angle. There's like, you do meet a lot of people who kind of try and get in at a higher level straight away without any of the experience. And I think being a runner, it's like with most jobs, you're at the bottom and you're seeing how every department works and you have to help every department. And, you know, you're going to get bollocked if you're not there helping the art department when you've been helping the camera department you're going to get in trouble, whatever you do as a runner sometimes, which in a way is good. You're kind of thrown in the deep end. Yeah. And then from that, I was like, right, I did a bit of work as an assistant director on some short films and then a really horrible low-budget film, which I think is on my IMDb. You'll see it. It had some like really big American names in it, but it was just all a bit underhand with the payments and stuff.
Shitty. So when they were like, you're going to be an assistant director, you were like, I've made it. That's not the first time you touched a camera, or you're like, hang on, I've done the...
Yeah, sort of. Because it was like a low-budget film and I was still kind of starry-eyed about everything, I went down to Cornwall to go and work on this thing and I thought, I think it was like 25, 26 and I was like, I must be like the youngest assistant director I know. And the assistant directors are basically, it's no way as glamorous as it sounds. You're not like... The director goes, I'm going to go and have lunch. Do you want to do these shots?
Assist me.
It's basically you're the gap between the production company and what's going on set. You're running the set. You're in charge of the schedule. You're the one shouting at everyone like, we need to be quicker. We're 20 minutes late. And then you've got three grades of it. You've got the first assistant director who's on set doing all that shouting. Mm. Second assistant director is in the back looking after the actors, getting them ready to be on set. And then you've got the third assistant director on set, which is basically like a glamorized runner. Who then looks after the runners and be like, oh, you all need to go make more teas and coffees and be quicker at it. And it's like, well. I did that. And it was a great crew on that shoot. But I really hated that job. And then when I came back up to London, I was like, right, I'll get back into running for a bit. And then I wanted to get into being in the camera department.
Yeah. So as a runner, you don't touch a camera as a runner at any point.
God, no.
So then how do they don't just go, oh, do you know what? We're short of a director. Let's get this runner to do it. Surely you're just, I don't understand the, how do
so
you
how
step
do you get,
up? Yeah,
it,
like,
yeah,
like
I don't
surely
know.
You're no different than a security guard in terms of you're a function. You do stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
It's great for you.
Yeah.
But for them, they're like, they're not looking down you going, this kid's showing real balls. That's just,
let's get.
Do they give you a chance or are you like, I want to be a director, let me do a really short film or something?
No,
yeah.
Not really.
Again,
it's one of those. So, with every department that you've got, there's like a hierarchy to it all. Mm. So, in the camera department, you've got the cinematographer or the director of photography, and then he might have a camera operator, so he might not even operate the cameras. Then you've got a focus puller underneath him, clapper loader, which loads the camera, does all the clapboards, looks after all the gear. They're kind of like the central hub of the camera department. They keep everything organized. And then you've got your trainee who's training up to be in that position. But with the director, you're kind of, you're the director. Like there's no hierarchy leading up to it. You just kind of magically appear out of somewhere. So,
like a unicorn.
Kind of, yeah. It's. I think it's one of those jobs where you have to get a production company or a producer to be ballsy enough to put you forward in for a film or a TV show or a commercial and be like, look, this guy makes good work, so let's get him to do the next one.
Yeah.
And so that's why I'm creating these short films at the moment, is because I need to have the work behind me to then go around and just be like, look, guys, I did this. Do you like it? Oh, that's nice. Yeah, cool. Can I come and do your next House of Cards season 5, please?
Yeah, yeah. Just a small 20 million. Just,
that'll be fine. Yeah, yeah.
Well, how do you feel if I'm going to go to the toilet now?
Yeah.
And we're going to turn this into a two-parter. How does that feel?
Yeah, yeah.
I've not done one before.
No, that's cool.
So this will go out tomorrow morning and then the next one will go out on Friday.
Yeah, yeah. No, that sounds cool.
I've not done one.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
There you go. That was the part one of episode 20 with Will Nash. I'm literally not going to say any more than this, other than I was busting for a pee and also quite fancied a beer. So listen to part two, because we go into way more background information about what they actually do in the film industry, what each member does, and then also how the hell you keep momentum up and how you stay enthusiastic for films and how important wives are. There you go. Bye.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.